We're ready for paper 20, section 4, which is old single column, page 226. Okay, so if you remember from last time, we're talking about the magisterial sons, or, you know, as they sometimes call them, the Avonal sons. Those paradise sons that are the joint offspring of the eternal son, of course, giving him the name son, and the infinite spirit. You know, second and third persons. Not God, obviously very high divine being, you know, of paradise origin, but not personalized deity, not God. And they have three basic modes that they interact with the ascension scheme relative to. We read about the judicial actions last time. We're ready to do the magisterial missions. And you notice they magisterial sons, magisterial missions. That's sort of their, you know, their central focus. And then on either side, they have the judicial actions and bestowal missions. So they serve both as a third dispensation descending son. You know, you've got the planetary prince, then you have Adam and Eve, and then a magisterial mission on a normal world. And then, you know, assuming there's just one magisterial mission, then the next one would be a bestowal. So they sometimes serve both, you know, as three and four, except when, of course, the Creator Son is the bestowal. So we're going to do the magisterial missions, and then we'll get in the bestowal issues, and we'll see how far we can get. There's a couple sections, lots of fun details. So we'll see how it goes here. Let's start up here.
Paper 20. The Paradise Sons of God.
No, let's start on section 4.
What?
Section 4.
My humble apologies. Section 4, Magisterial Missions. Prior to the planetary appearance of a bestowal sun, an inhabited world is usually visited by a paradise Avonal?
Yeah, Avonal.
A paradise of Avonal on a magisterial mission. If it is an initial magisterial visitation, the Avonal is always incarnated as a material being. He appears on the planet of assignment as a full-fledged male of the mortal races, a being fully visible to and in physical contact with the mortal creatures of his day and generation. Throughout a magisterial incarnation, the connection of the Avonal Son with the local and the universal spiritual forces is complete and unbroken.
Okay. So that last part, if you may recognize why they threw that last little bit in, that's in contrast to what you should remember is coming up with a bestowal mission where you're born as a babe. You start out, you know, as, you know, disconnected from your normal state, and, you know, and there's even that deeper mystery then of how you slowly come up out of the potentials of the absolutes and reconnect with your former paradise son nature. But in the case of a magisterial mission, it's, you know, it's a lot like what Machiavelli Melchizedek did, for our third epical revelation, you know, in just incarnating as an adult. You know, obviously still a lot of mystery, but not quite as much as, you know, as the born of a babe. Now, you know, what else is in there that, you know, that maybe struck you? You know, so, you know, we all know, like we were just talking about, that we're going to get a magisterial mission at some point. And we mentioned last time, you know, they pointed out how you can have multiple magisterial missions. You can have multiple ones before the bestowal son and multiple ones after, too. You have to have at least the one before, but there can be others before and after. So, you know, getting our magisterial son, you know, at least one, after the bestowal son is actually not abnormal. It's abnormal that we didn't get one before, but it's not. It wouldn't be really, you know, abnormal in the scheme of things to get one after. You know, and so we can be, you know, anticipating that sometime in the future. And what will we be looking for? You notice what they said. The first time they come, they always come in corporeal form. They come incarnated. So he's going to be literally here, you know, as a visible, interactable being, just like Jesus was. But even more, if you remember from the universe sons of God, remember we are kind of including them indirectly and talking about the sons of God here, like they, you know, they introduced at the beginning of the paper. Those Melchizedek sons, 12 of them are attendants with an Avonal son on either a magisterial or a bestowal son mission. And on a magisterial mission, they always take corporeal form if the magisterial son takes corporeal form. Okay, so in other words, on the first one, you always have 13 pretty impressive beings show up on the planet. You know, that will be even harder to ignore, you know, than Jesus, you know, in a lot of ways. So, you know, you're looking for a pretty profound phenomenon somewhere in the future. Now, how far in the future? Well, we'll see. There's some things that, you know, allow some speculation on that as we get into the section a little bit more. But just, you know, make sure that really sings home, what you're talking about if you just, you know, say magisterial mission. You're talking about 13 corporeal beings living on the planet for who knows how long, you know, in an immortal sort of mode until they decide to turn themselves off.
The one thing I just listened to this paper a few days ago, and the thing that caught my attention was they appear as males. Jesus was a male.
Right.
These guys are males. And I'm just wondering, on a female-dominated planet, you know how we've read in the past, mm-hmm. If they might appear as female.
No. I mean, again, it's not a choice to appear as a male. I mean, they can't do anything else. They're sons.
Well,
you make them...
aren't we sons, too?
No, not... You see, none of us really are ascending sons yet, technically. We're faith sons. In other words, we're sort of potential ascending sons. You know, technically, you're not definitively a son in the eyes of the universe until you fuse with your adjuster, so that you have that definitive father nature. You know, that which stems from the father is a son. And so, yeah, it's, I mean, it's very important. You know, there's nothing arbitrary about them saying son, or them, you know, being a male of that realm. When they incarnate, it's just a translation, as it were, of their nature from something that we can't see to something we can see. That you translate that, it comes out as a male. That's because that's just what they are. They can't manifest as anything else any more than I could, you know, somehow wish myself to be a female. You know, 5 minutes from now, I'm a male. That's what I am.
Plus, if they came to a planet as a core of females, none of the men would believe them. They would just be dismissed as a bunch of crazy women.
Well, if it was a planet like ours, but, you know. You know,
well, remember, I don't believe that there are a lot of planets in this disadvantaged situation.
Yeah, but remember, they'd actually speak to that. You know, we're fairly, you know, on a normal world, you know, that sort of, you know, like she was mentioning, extensive bias towards females or extensive bias towards males, you know, one way or the other gets, you know, washed out very early on. I mean, by the time, you know, Adam and Eve are done with their mission, you know, all of those rudimentary things are, you know, are over with. So when a magisterial son comes along, things are in a state that we really don't even appreciate. And he takes, you know, and they tell us he basically takes the world to a state that we can't even imagine right now. So he starts with something we really can't appreciate and ends with something we can't imagine. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's, you have to, remember that, you know, that we're, you know, and you'll see this often, you know, they'll have to put in an extra word in some sentences because of planets like us, you know, that are an exception to the normal state of affairs. Did you have a question, John, or no? Yep.
When they come, will they make themselves known right away, or could they hang out?
Well, see, again, you don't know. You know, and so this is you know, you can speculate endlessly on
so
that.
They'll have, like, some kind of frat house on a hill.
Yeah, or an exclusive villa in the Swiss Alps, or, yeah, who knows. But obviously at some point they're going to engage, and, you know, so it's really irrelevant, you know, to that point I was making earlier. At some point, there's this dramatic fact that there are these 13 impressive beings among us. And now, and again, it's going to be so impressive because we're the exception. I mean, think about a normal world. This wouldn't be quite as dramatic an event. I mean, you've had a planetary prince and immortal staff members and immortal Adam and Eve and all their children and all. I mean, you've had all that for ages. You're totally comfortable with this notion that celestials occasionally come to visit. You know, so, but for us, this is going to be a major culture shock. Another distinct, you know, distinction. Bestowal sons have to die one way or another. Okay. Magisterial sons, you know, are not going to say, well, I got to die one way or another, so I guess I'll let them kill me. No, that's just not part of the equation. Okay, if they're not ready to go, they'll have the master physical controllers do whatever, you know. So, you know, you might try to launch nuclear weapons at them or something, but nothing's going to happen. You know, the same is true if Machiavelli Melchizedek, you know, establishes a planetary headquarters. He builds a physical headquarters, and, you know, you're not going to attack him and win or anything. You know, there's not going to be any. So it'll be a very dramatic thing if we actually did try something like that, and, you know, we're humbled, okay, by our inability to do anything. I mean, you know, a master physical controller, all you'd have to do is just think it, you know, and the app, you know, and the local space would cease to transmit radio waves. For instance, I mean, he could, you know, I mean, they could do anything they wanted like this. Okay, so, you know, you're not going to somehow, scuttle the mission, thwart this. You know, God will not be mocked. You know, and these are very definitive, you know, expressions of what God demands be. So, all right, and just the one other thing. Getting back to how this all got started with your comment about. Or someone's comment, whoever it was, about males. I can't remember where it all started. You know, flip these things around. I mean, the point is, you know, is always to remember that the fact that a male like me exists in the universe is not some sort of strange consequence of random molecular phenomena. I mean, I'm a downstepped expression of a higher fact. That's why there are males. In the same way, a female is a downstepped expression of a higher fact. That's just why we exist. So if you take a higher fact and downstep it, like incarnation, you get the same thing. I mean, that which is father-like gets expressed as a male. That which is mother-like gets expressed as a female. And you'll see that comes into play here, too, that some of those issues again. All right, so let's read some more.
A planet may experience many magisterial visitations, both before and after the appearance of a bestowal sun. It may be visited many times by the same or other avonals, acting as dispensational adjudicators. But such technical missions of judgment are neither bestowal nor magisterial, and the Avonals are never incarnated at such times. Even when a planet is blessed with repeated magisterial missions, the Avonals do not always submit to mortal incarnation. And when they do serve in the likeness of mortal flesh, they always appear as adult beings of the realm. They are not born of woman.
And right, that last line is something I was just alluding to, that last sentence before we started reading again. Okay, not to expand on it totally yet until we get some more context, but just note, for some reason, the author chose to use that expression, you know, and didn't say born as a babe, or anything like that. Purposely said born of woman. And so you want to ask yourself, why? Well, think about what I was just commenting. A woman, a mortal woman, is a downstepped expression of God the Mother. Or at least you embody, you know, in part, that fact. For a son, a paradise son, to come into direct relationship with woman, to be born of woman, rather than just being translated as a male of the realm, but to have to come into this incarnation, this very intimate interaction with a downstepped expression of God the Mother, what does that imply? It implies that something about God the Mother is going on. It's not just the descending hand of God the Father, you know, that is fundamentally what a descending son is doing, is expressing a downstepped hand of the Father. The Mother must be coming into play. That's why they said it that way. Yeah, so, you know, as we get in here a little bit more, keep that in mind. Right up front, they're saying it that way, so that if you've begun to think in the full twofold perspective of God the Father and God the Mother, you know, that's a heads up to be thinking about the significance of that, the significance of God the Mother in what they're about to talk about. And, well, you know, born of woman, I'm talking about when we start talking about bestowal missions.
So they could be cloned. I'm just kidding.
That's what being incarnated as an adult is. It's a translation sort of a thing. See,
plus they're not here to experience the life of an ordinary mortal, which is what you get when you're born of woman. They're here to be on a mission of grown-ups, and they don't have to go through that whole excruciating experience.
Childhood. Right, that's just what I was thinking.
But anyway, I mean, just keep that in mind. I'll explain a little bit more as we get further in.
When incarnated on either bestowal or magisterial missions, the Paradise Sons have experienced adjusters, and these adjusters are different for each incarnation. The adjusters that occupy the minds of the incarnated sons of God can never hope for personality through fusion with the human divine beings of their indwelling, but they are often personalized by the fiat of the Universal Father. Such adjusters form the Supreme Divinington Council of Direction for the administration, identification, and dispatch of mystery monitors to the inhabited realms. They also receive and accredit adjusters on their return to the bosom of the Father upon the mortal dissolution of their earthly tabernacles. In this way, the faithful adjusters of the world judges, become the exalted chiefs of their kind.
Okay. You notice they're reminding you of calling Divinington by the bosom name, bringing in that the relationship of all seven fathers' worlds to the infinite upholder, at that infinite level, father becomes mother, or mother becomes father, whichever way you want to look at it. you know, hence the bosom of, and the adjusters being fragments of the infinite upholder, and Divinington being the unmodified presence of the infinite upholder, that is their home world. Okay, so there's all that that we talked a lot about a lot back, you know, when we were talking about the Father's worlds. Okay, but, you know, in context here, adjusters, okay, you know, Machiavelli and Melchizedek, you had the same thing. When you have these incarnated beings, even when they're incarnated as an adult, there's an adjuster. Well, so on the one hand, you say, well, okay, that's just reminding you that for the full functioning of divinity via the mortal form, you know, by the material form, you need an adjuster to, you know, make it all come together. You know, and we kind of have that sense that, you know, from the other direction, that in order to really get ourselves fully connected into our future, we have to draw closer and closer to the adjuster and infuse with it. You know, we have to have that adjust. An adjuster is an essential element of fully relating a material origin creature to the cosmos. So there's that. But there's a side effect to a material-minded creature, adjutant-minded creature, having an adjuster. What is that side effect?
A soul.
And not just on bestowal missions, you know, there too, but on magisterial missions as well. And they may have many, many of these. Every time they do, a soul is formed that's going to fuse with their original nature. Okay? They're accumulating a very definitive ascender-like nature. I mean, you know, again, if you give a material creature an adjuster, spirit gravity grabs a hold of that spirit fragment, and at least for the time of that magisterial mission, they're being drawn up. You know, and the fact that they've been drawn up from where they started is manifested by, you literally have this super additive consequence, this soul that gets added to them so that they're greater, higher than they were before. They've been lifted up, and it literally, you know, modifies their being. It exalts their energy, their being.
Don't you think that the reason that they have an adjuster is because of the first paragraph, you know, when they stay totally connected all the time to the local and universe spiritual forces, that first of all, you know, the spirituality of this being before it even gets here,
right,
is, you know, beyond our comprehension, so to speak, in terms mm-hmm. of they're really connected to the mm-hmm. spirit
right.
of the rest.
Right.
So when they come here, you know, they're really trying to show us what the spirit of God is, so we can really get to know it better. But
right.
when they give them a thought adjuster along with what they already are,
right.
it seems that just gets them even more connected. You know, and also the experience, kind of what we experience, kind of the way Jesus did it. You know, the whole thing about Jesus was the whole thing of experiencing this life.
Right.
And I think that's kind of an interesting...
Right, but that's the bestowal mission. You know, that's last part. But your first part, yeah, that's what I was saying before. I mean, remember that in order for their divinity to fully engage as they need to be on a magisterial mission, you can't do that without... the adjuster. The adjuster is the bridge, you know, that perfectly allows their nature to manifest out of a material creature and to the people that they're trying to minister to. Yeah, that's right. That's a definitive part. You know, that's in terms of you know, the fact that they're on this mission. That's why they have an adjuster, because the adjuster allows them to actually do the mission. Without the adjuster, they couldn't do the mission. But see, I'm just trying to point. So, yeah, that's the primary reason they have an adjuster, so they can do the mission. But because they have an adjuster, there's this consequence, okay, that they're not the same after the mission as they were before.
They do many of them, different adjusters.
Right, with different adjusters.
They create different souls.
Yeah. Right, each time there's a new soul, and that merges in with their nature.
Interesting.
See?
That's far out.
Okay, so, and, they said that a lot of times they will be taken out of service after seven, but they say, that's not always the case. That could be many, many, a million maybe. So this could be a really, interesting phenomenon. You're building up. So you started with, remember, they're not God. They're just a creature. And they're paradise, origin, creation. I mean, all paradise citizens are paradise, origin, creatures too.
But they have a purpose.
Okay. But they start out as just a descending creature. A creature with a descending mission. A God-revealing mission. But the moment that they do one of these missions, that begins to change. They begin to turn around. When all is said and done, they're an ascending son with a new mission, God-seeking. Okay? They're being changed from a descending to an ascending creature. Okay? Because they're being brought into relationship with an adjuster. If God the Father started them on a downward course, God the Father can turn that course around. Where do the adjusters come from? God the Father. Yeah, he's going to change the direction of their nature. Okay? To an ascending son. So, once that sinks in, you go, okay, so we're accumulating ascending sons of a very interesting nature, paradise origin creatures that have been morphed into ascending sons by this process. Where are they? What's up with that accumulating collection of a different flavor of ascending sons? Okay, let's read some more.
Urantia has never been host to an Avonal son on a magisterial mission. Had Urantia followed the general plan of inhabited worlds, it would have been blessed with a magisterial mission sometime between the days of Adam and the bestowal of Christ Michael. But the regular sequence of paradise sons on your planet was wholly deranged by the appearance of your creator son on his terminal bestowal 1900 years ago.
Little choice of words commentary there. are you sure you know what you're doing here? It looks deranged to me. But I trust you. You must know what you're doing.
Urantia may yet be visited by an Avonal commissioned to incarnate on a magisterial mission. But regarding the future appearance of paradise sons, not even the angels in heaven know the time or manner of such visitations. For a Michael bestowal world becomes the individual and personal ward of a master son, and as such is wholly subject to his own plans and rulings. And with your world, this is further complicated by Michael's promise to return. Regardless of the misunderstandings about the Urantian sojourn of Michael of Nebadon, one thing is certainly authentic: his promise to come back to your world. In view of this prospect, only time can reveal the future order of the visitations of the paradise sons of God on Urantia.
Okay. Now, if you aren't familiar with the Bible, you were missing some things there. It begins with the quote. Okay, that's a very famous passage and a very problematic chapter of the Bible, the 24th chapter of Matthew. You've got three things in the Bible that spawn apocalyptic imagination. The book of Daniel, the book of Revelation, and the Revelation of John, and the 24th chapter of Matthew. And as they go forward from that quote, between the lines, if you notice, they're alluding to some sort of muddled confusion perspective. That's the current 24th chapter of Matthew. So, you know, let's go up to the Jesus papers. to paper 176, section 2, on page 1915 in the single column. Are you
looking for a toss-up?
Yeah, when you went in the front door, go down the stairs.
Okay. Say it again, Chris.
Okay, so page 1915, in the single column, it's the third paragraph down on page 1915. It's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th paragraph of section 2. Yeah, so you're in the Master's Second Coming. This section, you know, entitled The Master's Second Coming, that's tied to the 24th chapter of Matthew. Okay, what really he said, you know, and then they comment, we won't read that part, but, you know, a little past where we're going to read, they point out how that came to be the muddled mess that it is. It's a later apocalyptic writer. Remember, we've talked about how popular that apocalyptic literature was, you know, early times there. There's a whole bunch of New Testament tied apocalyptic literature. Some of that got directly put into the book of Matthew and then bled over from there into Mark and Luke. Okay, but so, you know, 24th chapter of Matthew is the core of this very muddled message about Michael's second coming. So, you know, they got you thinking about, they quoted from the 24th chapter of Matthew. They got you thinking about up here in the Jesus papers where they comment on that. So you might be motivated to go there and read something and see what you find. Oh, and by the way, before I read, do you notice in the that last sentence we read, it says, only time can reveal the future order of the visitations. Remember that word.
Plural.
Okay. Visitation, the word visitation. Okay, so that third paragraph on page 1915. And now, concerning the travail of Jerusalem, this is Jesus talking, about which I have spoken to you, even this generation will not pass away until my words are fulfilled. And we all know, in AD 70, the fall of Jerusalem. But concerning the times of the coming again of the Son of Man, no one in heaven or earth may presume to speak. Okay, well, there's the root of the line that's in the Bible that they were referring to. But you should be wise. Okay, now this is where it gets really interesting. He gives them some clues. But you should be wise regarding the ripening of an age. You should be alert to discern the signs of the times. You know when the fig tree shows its tender branches and puts forth its leaves that summer is near. Likewise, when the world has passed through the long winter of material mindedness, and you discern the coming of the spiritual springtime, of a new dispensation, it's not an arbitrary word, dispensation, should you know that the summertime of a new visitation draws near. Okay, visitation, same word. And dispensational visitation, one of the sons of God. So that still doesn't really tell me much. Ah, yes, but there's another clue. Material mindedness, you should be going, well, I'm pretty familiar with the Jesus papers, and I know if in paper 195, the second to last paper, there's a whole bunch of stuff the midwayers talk about materialism up there. Material mindedness. Maybe I should go look there and see what I find. You don't have to, I'll just tell you, it's in paper 195, section 6. I'll just, you know, remind you of one sentence that the midwayers give us there. And they're talking about materialism. Very important sentence. At the time of this writing, says the midway authors, at the time of this writing, the worst of the materialistic age is over. The day...
I don't know either.
We'll talk about that just a second. The day of a better understanding is already beginning to dawn, like springtime after winter. Okay. Each of you was born at some point. At some point, acquired spiritual consciousness and began to use it in the way we all initially immaturely use our spiritual consciousness as an error and evil detector. Ever since you turned on your spiritual consciousness, you've been counting. One error, two error, three error, four error. And every day, the count gets bigger. There's more and more materialism every day that you count. Fairly subjective assessment, however, of the situation. Yeah, every subjective human thinks that. An objective observer is telling you something that you can't observe with your subjective short little lifespan. Objectively, yeah, it's not like materialism has gone away, but it's peaked, and we're on the springtime side. Okay? You have an oscillation. You reach a peak of winter, you start going down into springtime. At some point, you cross the line, and it flips sign from winter to summer. The summer of the new visitation.
Did you mean to time this with solstice? Because it just happened.
Yeah. Just so happens it's a solstice. Okay. So this should be fairly relevant. Okay. Again, you don't know any precise time. Okay. But Jesus said, what did Jesus say? He said, and I think I can trust him, he says it draws near. Not you can expect it in the next 1,000 years or something. Okay? Got to be nearer than that. Doesn't mean it's going to be tomorrow. But, of course, we all know some of the revelators think it could be tomorrow. Okay? But
he was talking 2,000 years
ago. Right. He's talking 2,000 years ago. He kind of has an insight on these sorts of things. Okay? He gave us a clue, and the midwayer said, guess what? What Michael told you 2,000 years ago is beginning to come to pass. Can you discern the signs of the times? Okay. So we should take heart. Somewhere in the not too distant future, something that qualifies as near. Okay, to a mortal, not to the ancients of days. Okay, to a mortal, something that's near.
Everything's near if you're an ancient.
Okay, I mean, if it's going to be near, it's got to be on the on the scale of hundreds of years, not thousands of years. No, so you could speculate. Well, maybe, say 200 years from now, maybe we're probably going to get a magisterial son. Now, of course, you could take it up a notch. He didn't say it was definitively going to be a magisterial son. Could be him. Okay, he did say a new dispensation. He's going to come again because he's got to finish the bestowal son mission, which he couldn't finish because he went out of order. I mean, he has to come again to finish the bestowal son mission. Okay? That's why he's got to come again. I mean, all...
I understand that. What you mean by that.
All he could do is, really is his seventh bestowal and give us, a little bit more. Remember, he decided, I'm going to stay on... After the baptism, give him just a little bit more. But he couldn't do the bestowal son. He couldn't really be the kind of spiritual uplifter that a bestowal son normally is, because that you can only do that predicated on the full first dispensation, the full second, and the full third. I mean, you have to uplift the biology and then the mind. You know, there has to be a scientific uplift, a philosophic uplift, and then you get the religious uplift of a bestowal son. You know, he couldn't even remotely do what a normal bestowal son does. He didn't have the predicate for it.
Right, and they say we're a whole dispensation behind.
Yeah, or more.
Yeah.
Right. We're out of sequence. Right. I mean, a lot of people on the planet are still back exactly like what the Planetary Prince's staff found 500,000 years ago. Yeah. You know, and we go out to teach them. We teach them the exact same things that they were teaching them 500,000 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, about wells and, you know, I mean.
Sanitation.
Okay, sanitation. All right. So, okay, so just keep that in mind. You see, we putting these pieces together, you know, it's a pretty strong hint that in the not-too-distant future, and I'm certainly of the opinion, I'm a little contrary to the chief of Seraphim. I think it's going to be the magisterial son. That just seems more logical to me, that we would get the magisterial son and get some of that, you know, in place for Michael. So that he can really do.
Still able to finish right now.
But you know, besides, there's also the fact that, you know, we see an obvious, you know, what revelation failed to accomplish mindily, evolution is beginning to manifest. You know, these collective expressions, civilizational expressions of the adjutants, you know, and we're quivering on the very brink of, you know, that's not brink, that's very brink, see, again, of quality of thinking.
Give us an example of what you mean by that.
Well, that, you know, when you start to see a collective recognition and expression of wisdom.
Here we have a revelation.
Well, then there's a revelation, you know, which again, you know, it's an emergency revelation. It's a philosophic uplifting revelation. The philosophic uplifter is the magisterial son. You know, Machaventa was a spirit emergency spiritual uplifter, and you know, prior to the spiritual uplifter of the bestowal son. I mean, you know, so the very fact that this is a philosophic text and not a religious text also points to the fact that who's coming next is a magisterial son. No, it's more than a religious text; it's a philosophic text. That's a magisterial son. So, yeah, that's my sense of it.
And I want to point out, too, is that magisterial son means magistrate. And so is that more of the justice? And
again, they choose to give him that name because some of their missions are just the judicial actions. So that's very appropriately called magisterial. Even when they're doing this type of mission that they call a magisterial mission, or when they're doing a bestowal mission. Both of those, they also are going to oversee the adjudication, you know, the dispensational resurrection. So, and all three things they do, they serve magisterially, literally, directly. So that's why that was a blanket term, but they're doing a lot more. I mean, on the magisterial mission and the bestowal mission. One, they're serving as the philosophic uplifter, the, you know, mindful wisdom uplifter, and then the other one they're serving as a spiritual uplifter. Then, like I said, see that, so that term, that fact about them that is general, that is in all three types of things, serving as overseer of the adjudication, they chose to pick that as the general designation. And then that's why I said they call these magisterial missions, because that, so once you call it that being, you know, kind of forgetting about the fact of what that word literally means, you know, the core of their three things are those magisterial missions. And yes, and they also do those, and they also do those. But see, so that's, it's, they come to be called magisterial missions in a very indirect way. It's not because it's about being a magistrate, you know, during that whole mission. It's about being the philosophic uplifter. Okay. So, all right. Meanwhile, so that's one little fun thing. Meanwhile, back to where we were, if I can find where we were.
2:22.
Okay. Let's see. Do you want to read some more?
Sure.
Or unless, okay. All right.
Oh, do you want
Someone else is clamoring?
Well,
Okay.
I've read better, I admit. Excuse me. Number 5, bestowal of the paradise sons of God. The eternal Son is the eternal Word of God. The eternal Son is the perfect expression of the first absolute and infinite thought of his eternal Father. When a personal duplication or divine extension of this original Son starts on a bestowal mission of mortal incarnation, it becomes literally true that the divine Word is made flesh, and that the Word thus dwells among the lowly beings of animal origin.
Okay. We mentioned Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and of course there's John, the beginning of the Gospel of John. You know, and in terms of the issue of return, I mean, there's just one basic little statement in the book of John, you know, that he'll be back. That's basically all John says. There's none of this apocalyptic, you know, augmentation of that fact like there is in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And then, of course, you know, like I said, it begins with that beautiful poetry of the Word made flesh.
On your rancher, there is a widespread belief that the purpose of a son's bestowal is, in some manner, to influence the attitude of the universal Father. But your enlightenment should indicate that this is not true. The bestowals of the Avonal and the Michael sons are a necessary part of the experiential process designed to make these sons safe and sympathetic magistrates and rulers of the peoples and planets of time and space. The career of sevenfold bestowal is the supreme goal of all paradise creature sons, and all magisterial sons are motivated by the same spirit of service which so abundantly characterizes the primary creator sons and the eternal son of paradise.
Yeah, that was paradise creator sons, not creature sons.
Did I say creature?
Yeah. It's okay. Everyone got
the
it.
The primary creator sons.
There's a couple things in there. Did you notice that you just got jabbed? Okay, there's a lot of people on the planet that are pretty sure they're enlightened. They have a lot of spiritual consciousness, and they're going to lead man out of darkness. But your enlightenment should indicate that this is not true. Well, there's not a lot of that recognition. there's a little bit, for those that this isn't self-evident that the old atonement doctrine thing is not logical. That's telling you something about just how enlightened you actually are. But now, when they say your enlightenment, what do they mean? Do they mean that you're a prophet and that you've been engaged by some being? And, you know, what does that mean when they say your enlightenment?
I thought they meant by reading the Revelation.
No. What? That certainly helps, but that's not what they're referring to.
Well, I would guess it's just simply your recognition and understanding, but that's...
Well...
Maybe that's making the question. There's
enlightenment. Okay, light has been put in, spiritual light. You're engaged by three spiritual ministries that have put light into your mind.
The Holy Spirit.
Okay, the Holy Spirit, Spirit of Truth, Thought Adjuster. Okay. In a very simple way, the Holy Spirit, that logical acumen, you know, you heard me say, I mean, it ought to be self-evident, it ought to be just a logical recognition that that's illogical, okay, that your first cosmic intuition could be entering in. And then it should indicate that this is not true. Well, you've got, you know, with just the three cosmic intuitions, none of the three directly supplies objectively the ability to directly recognize truth when you're exposed to it. You're given a fourth recognition ability, the Spirit of Truth. So, those are the ones that are really up front here. Obviously, the adjuster, you know, would be giving this a booster shot, this ability. But, you know, you have the ability to directly, you know, know self-evidently that truth is truth when you're exposed to it.
That's right.
How come you're not using it? You know, how come you're still laboring? Yeah, so that's, you know, your enlightenments, the three, you know, primary spiritual ministries, and of course angels help too, but now, did you notice something that may have been sounded odd there? John earlier was mentioning the sympathetic magistrates and rulers. You know, rulers, of course, that's the Creator's son, and the magistrates, the magisterial sons, you know, and having this experience, especially as a bestowal son, brings in that full, direct, experiential relationship to the life that we have to lead so that they're sympathetic to our, you know, the tribulations that beset us. But safe?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that should give you pause. It's like, I can't think of any definition of the word safe that makes that sentence make sense. Yeah, that's what you should have said to yourself. You need to penetrate a little deeper. What do they, why, they do this in other places. They use that, this word safe. You've got to look at the etymology. You've got to understand the root sense of the word safe so that you know what they're getting at there. Obviously safe is in contrast to danger. You know, and we've talked about, you know, they're always using the word danger. Again, not in the ignorant ways that we use it, but in the root meaning of the word, the etymological meaning of the word. You know, dangers, you know, like I've said a million times, the root of that word is the same as the root of the word dominate. Okay? The word danger isn't about, you know, you might stub your toe. The word danger is about potential domination of your mind is in play. A misapplied spirit energy to your mind is very definitively in play. Danger, danger. Spirit dominates mind. Ill-formed spirit is not going to give you a mindful form that's going to serve you well. Danger. Safe is the opposite of that. Well, so that, you know, just saying that, you know, might lead you to a, you know, sort of coining a definition for the word safe. But the root of the word safe, going back into, you know, the Andite roots, the Indo-European root, it means whole, whole. Okay. Safe, you know, making it so that they embody the integrity of the whole. Okay. Well, if I'm going to embody the integrity of the whole, okay, that's not about God the Father. It's not about the consecration of my will to the perfect will of God the Father. That's about that other consecration of my mind, you know, to be a wholehearted embodiment of the universal harmony upheld by God the Mother. Okay? I'm going to need to come into very definitive relationship with the whole and the individuality of the whole. Okay? I'm going to need to engage the other side of the original. I'm a descending son. Okay, so you're a Avonal or a Michael son. I'm a descending son. I've come down from the Father as a descending revelation of God the Father. I've come down from the side of the original. It's called the first center. I need to get into relationship with the other side of the original, the Paradise Trinity. I need to go all the way down to the bottom of the Father's descending hand where it meets that foundation. I need to be born of woman. I need to engage that which comes from the Trinity, the Mother. Okay? Remember how recently we did the origin, history, destiny. Okay, think about these beings. Their paradise origin, their father origin. They need to come into relationship with the other origin, the same origin that we have as ascending beings. Our origin is in the Paradise Trinity, and through the Mother, our destiny is in the infinite all are. It's only the Paradise Trinity that it directly engages infinity, the reality that is welling up out of the three absolute reservoirs. See, so that's what they're doing. That's why they said, born of woman. They need to come into relationship with the Paradise Trinity. And in the process, turn around and become a measure of an ascending being. Okay. And when they do that, they will now have the opportunity to consecrate themselves to the whole, just like we do. Okay. And that's the safe part. Okay. The sympathetic part is, they speak of that a lot. You know, why does a creator son go through his seven bestowals? He starts out as just a creator son, just a vicegerent of the father. Rules by that divine right, and occasionally beings, you know, aren't sure they like that, like Lucifer, you know. What gives you the right to rule over me? So he goes through that experience, comes in relationship with the Supreme, and of course the Mother in the Supreme. You know, the personal spiritual aspect of the Supreme stems from where? The Paradise Trinity, not from the Father. Right. So, that whole sympathetic thing, you know, he still is going to be functioning in that father hand mode, and it's going to be sympathetic now. So that sympathetic part is kind of the father side of the equation, the safe part. Okay, the father is not the whole, nor the individuality of the whole. And this word safe means the integrity of the whole. That's the other side of the equation. So again, see, it's two things separated by and. Can you see that one is father and one is mother related?
So in this case, you know, the way I look at it sort of is like Michael, Jesus or whatever, you know, they were created by the Father and the Son. So they are, you know, when they're not necessarily experiential beings yet until, and they go, and but he's a manifestation of the Supreme. So in order to be able to get that, he has to experience these particular lives, just like we are. Okay. Only he's coming from a whole different place than we are. So, you know, if he doesn't get into the experience of it, he doesn't really have that, as understanding or safe, whatever it is, to know really what it's like, because he's so far beyond that or above that to begin with.
He starts out a lot like an adjuster starts out. It's purely an existential starting point. You know, and then from that existential starting point, they begin to acquire experience. Because even though they start basically wholly existential, they have experiential potential. Unlike God the Father, who starts, always is and ends as existential. He's the one purely existential fact. But by individuating a part of himself, breaking that part free, that part is liberated from the bondage of being purely existential forever and can experience. An adjuster can acquire experiences. By making, pairing up with the Eternal Son and making a Creator Son, a downstepped expression, a separation, again, that's a being that's liberated from, you know, what you could say is, you know, a bondage, you know, to ever existential. So, yeah, so you have, you know, these are all parallel. All right, so, yeah, that's you know, that just notice that these two opposite words, danger and safe. See, in both cases, you can't look at really at the definitions in the dictionary and understand how the revelators are using it. There's not enough truth in any of those definitions. They're trying to reveal truth. The truth, the reason those words are used, because there is truth in their etymological root. Okay, you gotta go back to that. You know, I'll just mention it again. I mean, you know, why is it that, you know, in decades past, some people noticed that if you got an old dictionary, you could occasionally find a definition somewhere in the list that seemed to work a little bit better to interpret a sentence in the book. That's just simply because, you know, in times gone by, a lot of times there was an active use of a word in more of its literal etymological sense. You don't need the old dictionary, you just need the etymology. And a lot of times, even if it's a really old dictionary, it's so long ago that anyone has used the word in its direct etymological sense that, you know, there isn't even a, it was before dictionaries were made. Okay? So.
I'm reading this sentence with a little bit of an additional meaning, because I'm diagramming the sentence in my mind, and
mm-hmm.
and safe there
mm-hmm.
is not only an adjective for making the suns safe. It's really safe is really an adjective for magistrates and rulers of the people.
Right.
So it's so that the I see trust in that word as much as wholeness. Trust from the standpoint of the people can trust.
Right, but that's, you're saying it's the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, why can something be trusted? If it embodies the integrity of the whole,
right.
It can be trusted. If it doesn't, it can't be trusted. You can't absolutely trust a Lennon index son, because they're a downstepped expression until they are no longer one-like. You know, that's what Lennon index means. No, they're no longer a one-like expression. They don't embody the integrity of the whole. They're reaching down to a level of engaging individuality relative to unity where they cease to embody the integrity of the whole. It's like, well, why would God make a being like that? Because if it embodies too much of the whole fundamentally, innately, it can't engage the very, very lowly individuality. It has to be able to engage the lowly individuality.
It's too high
right?
for us.
Right. You know, we can't meet eye to eye, and there's beings that need to meet eye to eye with mortal origin creatures. Okay? So there's no other way about it.
But Jesus did.
Yeah.
Chris, could you tell us again where you got sympathetic as the Father?
Oh, just that. I mean, it's what, you know, John was saying. I mean, they come from the Isle of Paradise, basically, with no, you know, literal experience.
So, lack of
and so, you know, they seem, you know, just think about them, you know, in crass fashion. I mean, you know, there's this guy in this ivory tower that says he's your ruler, okay? He's never been down in the trenches with anybody. What does he know about this life? He thinks he's going to tell me what I have to do. I mean, what does he know? Okay. See, it's so that father-like ruling hand is demonstrably for all, and no one can deny that he embodies sympathy. So if the ruling seems to be hard, it's not because they're aloof and don't know what they're talking about. They know very well, you know they do. You can trust that this is the only solution to this problem. It's going to be difficult for us. He's wise. He's sympathetic.
It's like you. You know, when the Creator Son is born of a mother and he starts out from nothing, you know, he leaves behind his past experience and who he really is, and then so he has to experience it kind of like you and I do.
He has to find God just like we do.
Right, and so then when he does that, which Jesus did pretty quick.
you know, he said, you know, I get it, so to speak. Now I understand what you guys have to go through. Only you didn't start where I started necessarily, though you do have a part of God to help you, but still. So I think that gives him that ability to experience is what's really the...
And an awful lot of it is for the benefit of the creatures that he's ruling, you know. Remember how we've talked about that? There's a number of things that are done in the universe that, you know, in a purely objective sense are pointless, like the resurrection of the unjust. Okay? You know, that's for those who need to be able to hear.
I was thinking Father from the existential viewpoint, which was not sympathetic, okay. But once he's done his bestowals, then he's sympathetic.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Okay. All right, let's read some more.
Some order of Paradise Sun must be bestowed upon each mortal inhabited world in order to make it possible for thought adjusters to indwell the minds of all normal human beings on that sphere. For the adjusters do not come to all bona fide human beings until the Spirit of Truth has been poured out upon all flesh. And the sending of the Spirit of Truth is dependent upon the return to universe headquarters of a Paradise Son who has successfully executed a mission of mortal bestowal upon an evolving world. During the course of the long history of an inhabited planet, many dispensational adjudications will take place, and more than one magisterial mission may occur, but ordinarily only once will a bestowal son serve on the sphere. It is only required that each inhabited world have one bestowal son come to live the full mortal life from birth to death. Sooner or later, regardless of spiritual status, every mortal inhabited world is destined to become host to a magisterial son on a bestowal mission, except the one planet in each local universe whereon a creature son elects to make his mortal bestowal.
He did a creator son. Elects to make...
Creator son. Did I say creature again?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
what's
the creature?
Okay. I can't see. creator
okay.
son.
Okay. One thing that you know might get you thrown off in there, when they say, but ordinarily only once will a bestowal son serve on the sphere. Okay, I mean, don't get... too grandiose with that. Don't overinterpret that. I mean, you know why that word ordinarily has to be in there. You live on the reason. I mean, we're an example of where the bestowal son has to come twice because he came ahead of the magisterial son. Okay. You know, they don't mean that in some, you know, normal sort of situation, you get two bestowal sons. Okay, and the reason is twofold. Do you think that you could have a bestowal son that falls short, and so another one has to come to make up the difference? No, that can't be. You know, it's just like. People who think there's a spiritual emergency right now. So in other words, you think that Michael failed in his, as a spiritual uplifter. Yeah, no, that's obviously illogical. Okay, the spiritual emergency was 4,000 years ago. That's why Machiavelli and Melchizedek came. There, you can't. We have all the spirit we need. The problem is not that we lack in spirit. The problem is we lack in philosophic integrity. It's, you know, it's a philosophic chaos. Okay, but the you know, that issue that I've been teasing you about, okay, you know, why is it that you have to have a bestowal son in order to pour out the Spirit of Truth? Okay. You know, you need to get this, and, you know, one Spirit of Truth is all you need. You don't have to do it twice or anything like that. But, you know, why is Why does a bestowal, why can't a magisterial mission lead to the pouring out of the Spirit of Truth, say? Okay? What, when Michael, you know, and even if he's Michael working with a magisterial son who was on the bestowal mission, you know, when the Spirit of Truth is poured out on all flesh, on the world of visitation, does Michael directly distribute, you know, that ministry? Is he ubiquitous so that he can be everywhere present? Like this ministry is pouring out upon all flesh? No. I mean, that ministry can only get to all flesh via the mother. Okay? It's poured out upon the creative mother spirit, you know, in the local case. That, in order for him to pour out the Spirit of Truth, he has to have a relationship with the mother that you can only get when you literally go down and are born of woman and have an origin rooted in the Paradise Trinity, and from there have a mother nature that can directly relate to what you need to pour this out upon. Otherwise, there's no compatibility. So, you know, it's key to this act.
Isn't the Spirit of Truth poured out on other worlds before Michael sent the bestowal?
We're about to get to that. But every time there's a bestowal son, be it the Creator Son or the Magisterial Son, that world gets the quote unquote Spirit of Truth, and I won't say the rest because we're about to read it. You know the details of that. But but it's not poured out upon all of Nebadon.
So, but the thing so the Spirit of Truth has to be there before the adjusters can come. You know, pretty much.
Right.
Without discrimination.
Right, and that's because not only is it the Spirit of Truth, but like, you know, like I have on the chart as a reminder here, it's also the Spirit of Unification. Okay, it not only gives you the ability, a direct ability to recognize truth when you're exposed to it. That's the Spirit of Truth, name. But it's also the Spirit of Unification. It's the bridge between time and eternity, as it were. It allows a seventh circular time to be connected to an adjuster, eternity. You don't have to get up to the lowest level that the adjuster can reach down to, third circular level. It bridges the gap between seventh circular or sixth circular, whatever, you know, and that third circle level. It unifies those two. It's the Spirit of Unification. Yeah. Right. All right, let's see.
If you're a seventh circular, mm-hmm, and the adjuster reaches down only to the third circle level,
mm-hmm,
then a lot of this must be going on in your super consciousness. You're not really aware of it.
Yeah, and lo and behold, when you read about the adjuster, that's what it says. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. He's up there in the superconscious domain, trying to make a form very gently that will float down by material gravity down to your consciousness level. And if you're in the incessant clamoring mode, as soon as that delicate little soap bubble drifts down, you're going to whack it, you know. And
it took 5 years to make that bubble.
Yeah, so you remember what it says. I mean, that's why when you're asleep, you know, or some sort of state like that, some more passive state, the adjuster might be able to actually have that form drift down into the conscious domain and stay there and have some effect on the form in that level, so that when you wake up, without even thinking about it, you're kind of working with a reformed domain, and you have thoughts that you... You know, or these thoughts in ways that you've never had before. It's adjusted the thoughts. Okay.
Did you say, does the
just a little bit more about how being born of woman gives you a relationship to the mother? I mean, it sounds like it's obvious, but I don't know.
Well, okay, the point of that is to recognize the profound mystery that is you. Okay? And they purposely say it that way to remind, you know, that whole bit when they, you know, Trinity, you're talking about Trinity origin beings, and in there they give us that classic line about origin, history, destiny, and we, I'm an origin, you know, that's what fundamentally an ascending son is it's been initiated by the Father, so it's the Son, but it really is coming up, not, you know, not
well,
down.
No, I'm Trinity origin. I know.
Okay, just a second. So, what does it take to make men or women, you know, any sort of an ascending son, an ascending fact? They're by saying you need to be born of woman, they're reminding you that the female in the dual procreative process is doing a very profound, that it's actually the female that's fundamentally grounding the child to the Trinity so that it has an origin. To recognize that the fact that there's male and female and it takes two to tango, that in this sense of giving you a cosmic origin, the female is the foundational element. She is place. That place is grounded on the Paradise Trinity. The Paradise Trinity is the only deity that directly is engaging infinity. The matter, mind, and spirit energy that you're made out of. It's the only deity that directly engages that stuff. Okay? And your mother grounded you, okay, in that origin. And the father, your father, you know, is serving as the downstep vehicle of the father's initiation of that phenomenon. There's place and injection into place. And everything you can think of about it, you know, is literally so. Okay? You know, why is it that the hand that rocks the cradle still fraternizes with destiny? Because she's closer to the original. She's grounded. I mean, a man is bounded away a bit. Okay? Once becomes a man. But he didn't become a man totally from men. A woman was involved. So, you know, the your mother sort of eventuated your grounding in you if you're a man. If you're a woman, you begin at the ground. Just naturally. And you serve there for a while. And then you go into the sun mode. More definitively, where no longer are you going to be experiencing directly the fact of being the downstepped expression of God the Mother. That's all eventuated in your core and no longer experienceable.
This is one way of thinking about that is that chromosomally, women are XX and men are XY. I mean, it's the grounding of it is all X, and that I don't need to go.
That's an interesting thought. You know that you have sort of a foundation of X and a Y thing is on top of it, and that's really what's expressing. And so the X part is, you know, is sort of hidden and, you know, eventuated in the core and not directly manifesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so but the woman, you know, is. Both are down there, and and so she just serves there for a while. In this life, perforce you serve two masters, and you can't change the fact that you have two exes. Mm-hmm. Okay, But that all goes away in the next life, you know. See, between the lines of all this is some very fascinating stuff about really appreciating how profound humans are. You know, when you challenge yourself to interpret every aspect of your nature as coming down from above, rather than just, you know, coincidentally, magically popping up from below, and hence it's not profound at all. What's profound about mud and lightning bolts? So when you know about God the Mother and the Paradise Trinity, you know about that. It gives you the whole potential to discover for the first time what we really are. You know, that's why that statement, I mean, for the first time now in the fifth epical revelation, we can know both of our parents. And what we're discovering here is, oh my goodness, knowing that other parent that is only now first revealed is really important to understanding myself, whether I'm male or female. You know, really augments your, you know, recognition of what you're doing right now as a female. But you know, how it can be that I could be an ascending son is wholly predicated on that other side of the original, that what's never been revealed, what stems from the Paradise Trinity, okay, and what upholds us all the way after we've been initiated by the Father. It just really changes your whole sense of self and your whole sense of relationship to God.
And Jesus loved men because he valued them so much. And you, when you think about what you're saying, mm-hmm. we can understand why he valued them.
When we've gotten into really talking about total deity, you know, again, remember that paragraph up in paper 118, you know, supreme and ultimate, where they have all those self hyphen, you know, designations, and we recognize that they're tied to all the different facets of deity. Right? I mean, just, you know, that really, you know, brings it home about how incredibly profound this is, the fact of me. And you just, the more you study, the more profound it becomes. And all of its profound character is rooted in that which has no relationship to time, you know, fundamentally. And so, again, it, you know, am I valuable? Like you're just saying, value. Am I valuable because of what fact I am in time? No, I'm valuable for what I am that transcends space and time. I'm valued because of my origins in transcendent deity. And so any notion that this human is more valuable than that human because this human is older than that human or something like that, no. There is no such thing. If you think there is, you don't know what the word value means. Yeah. All right. Where were we? Do you remember, reader?
Understanding.
Is that where we were understanding? Okay.
Understanding.
All right. Go ahead.
Understanding more about the bestowal sons, you discern why so much interest attaches to your rancha in the history of Nevadon. Your small and insignificant planet is of local universe concern simply because it is the mortal home world of Jesus of Nazareth. It was the scene of the final and triumphant bestowal of your Creator Son, the arena in which Michael won the supreme personal sovereignty of the universe of Nevadon.
Keep going.
Shall I keep going?
Yep, yep.
At the headquarters of his local universe, a Creator Son, especially after the completion of his own mortal bestowal, spends much of his time in counseling and instructing the College of Associate Sons, the Magisterial Sons, and others. In love and devotion with tender mercy and affectionate consideration, these magisterial sons bestow themselves upon the worlds of space. And in no way are these planetary services inferior to the mortal bestowals of the Michaels. It is true that your creator son, selected for the realm of his final adventure in creature experience, one which had unusual misfortunes. But no planet could ever be in such a condition that it would require the bestowal of a creator son to effect its spiritual rehabilitation. Any son of the bestowal group would have equally sufficed, for in all their work on the worlds of a local universe, the magisterial sons are just as divinely effective and all-wise as would have been their paradise brother, the creator son.
Okay, so, you know, remember how they sort of reminded us of that up at the beginning, that, you know, in terms of the ministry to us, their divinity is what's in play. And they're equally divine. The fact that one is deity, personalized deity, is not directly relevant to, you know, the ministry as a bestowal son, for instance. Of course, it has a lot to do with, you know, the other part of what Michael was doing here, you know, completing his seven bestowals, and that is about deity, acquiring supreme type deity, you know, and that's a separate issue. Yeah, but just, you know, being the, you know, let's say it's the fourth epical revelation to that world, it just requires the divinity that they possess equally. Okay. Okay. There's an interesting little tidbit in here. This whole bit about, you know, like especially after he completes his seven bestowals, Creator Son spends much of his time in counseling and instructing the College of Associate Sons, the Magisterial Sons, and others. There's actually two things, one little tidbit and one big tidbit. You know, the and others, notice that. You know, we've mentioned, remember, there's all these unrevealed sons, you know, that we don't know anything about. So that's, they're reminding you of that there. But this College of Associate Sons, where is this college? It doesn't talk about it. It's got to be somewhere at the local universe headquarters.
Be in the Melchizedek world.
So they don't really talk about this college, where it is. You know, I remember there's another thing about the Salvington headquarters that they don't talk about. Remember how this works? Remember how you have 70 primary satellites around Salvington or around the local universe headquarters? And they're broken up into 10 groups of seven. The first seven is the Melchizedek ones. Yeah, and they go around, and then when you're reading in the local universe, they talk about those sets of seven, you know, those 10 sets of seven worlds, one at a time. So you're going, and it's in the order of the book. You know, you read about the Melchizedek's first, and that's the first set. You read about the Verondadex second, that's the second set. You read about the Lenonadex third, that's the third set. You read about the Life Carriers fourth, that's the fourth set of seven. And then they mentioned that the fifth is the Finaliter's set. And then you keep going in the book, and then they tell you about Brilliant Evening Stars. That's the sixth set. And they tell you about Archangels. That's the seventh set. Yeah. And then they mention that the Spirit Fusers is the eighth set. And then you read about the Seraphim. They tell you that's the ninth set. And they never tell you what the tenth set is. But after the Seraphim papers, what's the next paper in part two about?
Education.
You can look. Yeah, there's a couple papers in there about Seraphim. You know, ministering spirits, and then you have that second one where they give you all the different types of Seraphim, like planetary helpers, and you know, all.
I think it's
115. No. In part two, paper 39 is the second of those Seraphim ones. What's paper 40? The Ascending Sons of God are the next thing they talk about.
The college.
Huh? What?
The Ascending going up.
Yeah.
Not down.
Remember what I said? I mean, it's very definitive. They tell you this, each set is in the order of the book. The next thing they talk about in the book is Ascending Sons. And it's like, well, don't... And then you're looking in there, well, they don't talk about a tenth set and that's their world. Oh, it's like, well, oh, but they did say that there's a finaliter world. I guess that's really where the Ascending Sons go. They're on the fifth. But what about magisterial sons who have become ascending sons now? Ascending sons that don't immediately become finaliters, you know, in the paradise finaliter sense. You know, so for this age, you know, during this age, they're not finaliters. They're just ascending sons. Every one of those sets has colleges on it. Okay. Where do you think it's most logical, the College of Associated Sons? It's on the unrevealed 10th set of worlds around the local universe headquarters. And just to get you even more thinking that you're on a possible right track here, there's another college that the Creator Sons conduct that they directly describe as being a secret college. It's on Vice Gerrington. Appears that both of the colleges of the Creator Sons are secret. Not only the one on Vice Gerrington, but the one in the 10th set. You know? So what's the home... And you probably have others besides the Magisterial Sons. But at least we know about the Magisterial Sons. We have this accumulating group of sons that are no longer descending sons. They're done with that mission of being descending. They don't do judicial actions or magisterial missions or bestowal missions anymore. Where's their home base? Everyone has a home base. See, it's got to be that 10th set, that unrevealed set. You know, and if it's unrevealed, it's about the distant future stuff. Yeah, we've mentioned that before. That's always what Michael is. You know, once Michael is done with his seven bestowals, his attention immediately begins to start to turn towards the end of the finite age. Yeah, that's what's going on there. And then just to add to the fun of it all, in the least likely place, you're reading in the time of the tomb, in the Jesus papers. Okay, and you remember how the midwayers are talking about, there's lots of confusion about some of the technical details of how this all works with Michael and stuff, and what some people think and what they think, and there's this passing reference that's not explained. The context is they're thinking that Michael, augmented by the soul that is fused to him, is going to assume leadership of the Nebadon core of the finality. Well, he's going to be, if he's leading a core, it's a core of like individuals, like magisterial sons who have souls fused to. Again, they don't the Nebadon core of the finality. That's the magisterial sons and others who are in this mode. They're resident on that 10th set of worlds. Oh, wait a minute. Look at the symmetry. You know, I've got 10 sets arranged around. It's a 10th set, let's say it's on this side, is where the Nebadon core of the finality is. If I go diametrically opposite to the 5th set, who has the 5th set? The mortal core of the finality. Yeah. So, yeah, that's got to be who this Nebadon core of the finality. I mean, there's no other way. I mean, everyone else is anything that we'd be using the word finality for passes through, except when you put these pieces. Wait a minute. The magisterial sons aren't passing through. They're here, and they're, you know, they don't have to journey all the way to paradise to get the paradise stuff. They brought that with them. All they needed was the stuff we get very locally. Yeah. Now they've got all that we have. They're going to be in a fine outer-like state. Yeah. Every local universe is going to have a core, see, of them.
Yeah. Why, if they started out divine and they do either their magisterial mission or their judicial mission, what do they gain when they become ascending sons?
They begin with existential divinity.
Beg pardon?
They begin with existential divinity, but not experiential divinity. They acquire that. The more they experience, the more they're greater than they were before. They're more divine than they were to start with. Divine is a relative word. I mean, there's finite divinity, there's absolute divinity, there's co-absolute divinity. I mean, you know, it's a relative word. And and then that whole contrast of, it doesn't, see, and that's the whole thing about the sympathetic. It doesn't matter how insanely divine this vicegerent of the Father is, that's existential divinity. And experiential creatures have a right to say, you know not of what I am. Okay, I'm experiential. If you're going to rule over me, I expect you to be an exalted experiential fact that deserves to stand above me in the hierarchy.
On the job training.
Yeah. And he agrees. And he spends a billion years acquiring that. Yeah.
You think existential experiential is seen by existential beings as a higher state?
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
They've got it.
What God the Supreme possesses, the Father never will. Something transcendent to the Father. He's just existential.
You think of the Havana
days. Yeah. They start out very much like you were just describing. Perfectly divine as, you know, as the day is long. And the days are long there. 1,000 years. Okay?
Yeah.
But they're lacking in an infinite number of things, and they begin acquiring it. Yeah. And some of what they get can only be gotten from you as you pass through.
I thought it was interesting that they said they were just enough Havana citizens to meet the requirements of the experiential citizens as they come through. They're absolutely reciprocal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, let's see. We didn't get done with this section yet, did we?
No.
Let's see. One more paragraph? Okay.
Though the possibility of disaster always attends these paradise sons during their bestowal incarnations, I have yet to see the record of the failure or default of either a magisterial or a creator son on a mission of bestowal. Both are of origin too close to absolute perfection to fail. They indeed assume the risk, really become like the mortal creatures of flesh and blood, and thereby gain the unique creature experience. But within the range of my observation, they always succeed. They never fail to achieve the goal of the bestowal mission. The story of their bestowal and planetary service throughout Nebadon constitutes the most noble and fascinating chapter in the history of your local universe.
Okay. So, some of those things you probably have thought about because they've mentioned along these lines a lot, reminding you that just because a creator son is all the groovy things that a creator son is, doesn't mean it still doesn't have absolute free will, and if it does something perfectly, it's because it chose it that way. It's not because it happened like a machine automatically. There the possibility of disaster is very real. They indeed assume the risk, like they say. Fundamentally, what's there? Just using the word disaster should get you thinking along the right lines. If you know the etymology of the word, okay, the aster part, that's like astronomy, stars, okay? Disaster, apart from the stars, okay? In other words, not conformal with the cosmos, okay? So why? Think about the mystery of the incarnation. You've got this very, let's take Michael. You have this very definitive creator son. And as far as anyone can observe, with the best observation tools available to the Melchizedeks or anyone, Michael, that this rock solid definitive localized fact of Michael seems to spread itself to the four winds and disappear. Okay? And then out of that, diffuse, uniform, no Michael to be felt or seen anywhere, a little single-celled conception appears in a mother's womb. And it develops, matures, becomes an adult, and then there's Michael again. Okay? What's the only thing that could possibly do that? I mean, if he spreads himself into the totality, only the totality attitude can have a hold of the whole thing and could mysteriously bring it all back together into a nugget can be seen again. Okay. It's fundamentally that totality attitude that stems from the Paradise Trinity, that mother fact. From a father perspective, what's the risk? The risk is, well, can I let go of the father and trust the mother to put me back together again? Because the moment I let go of the Father, I will, he's the individuality of the parts, individuator, okay? I let go of that and poof, he de-individuates. Okay? And he's nowhere inside. So all the king's horses of the Father and all the king's men of the Father can't put him back together again. He's pouring himself out upon the totality attitude of the Mother. And in a completely imperceptible way, almost like magic, all the pieces come back together again. And of course, when it all comes back together again, there's all of Michael again, plus more.
Plus, yeah,
yeah.
It's really good to explain how he gets that.
Only the God of immanence, God the Mother, can do this. Okay, unless you want to invoke magic.
That's the relationship with the
mother. Yeah.
That's it.
Yes. That, We've said this many times. When you talk about these mysteries of mysteries, okay, they're mysterious in what sense? They're mysterious in you can get out the best observing tools and watch everything that's coming from the Father's side towards you, you know, and are keeping track of all that. And it's like, well, there's nothing happening there. But something happens anyway. Okay? You know, you're watching for it coming this way. It went the other way around. It went the mother way around the ellipse. Came in from underneath, you know, in a sense. That's how all of these mysteries of mysteries are. And since there's no way to directly observe what's not visible, sort of, you know, that whole backdoor phenomenon, that whole behind-the-scenes phenomenon, it's a mystery of mysteries. You know, it's not a mystery in an existential sense, say, you know, that there's no way this could exist. Once you know the mother, once you know the whole infinite eternal ellipse and that the original has two sides, it's obvious how this could exist, how an adjuster could get to you, all these things. There's another way around. There's another way to get to you besides that father-like, overt way.
Whenever, because this is evident to everybody else, but when you use the term, when it's used bestowal, the magisterial sons, when they experience bestowal, is that through the birth of a mother?
Yep. Yep. It's exactly the same. In that aspect. I mean, the only difference, of course, is, and we'll talk about that next time we get into the next section. You know, one's a creator and one's a creature, so there's a little bit different there. But the whole bit of being born of woman is exactly the same.
They're born as an infant and go through the whole process.
Yep. And die. Yep. From conception through birth and, you know, and adolescence and, you know, maturity and death. Yep.
In talking about this being held together, I read something not too long ago that talked about the mystery of what life imparts to a living organism, and it was being said by someone with a scientific background that without life, bodies would naturally disintegrate very quickly, and it was the presence of life within living organisms that kept them going, and it was a mysterious thing. Didn't understand, you know, the gist of the article was life was not understood, and that it seemed to be the only thing that kept the organism being held together, because otherwise entropy would have you believe that it would just disintegrate like any other material thing.
Right. And see, notice that there's a few brave souls that are starting to say that again. That was first said in the middle of the 19th century and then forcibly forgotten. Because, I mean, you heard me mention this before, the moment that you discovered that matter in and of itself has this immutable law associated with it, the second law of thermodynamics, that it goes from order to chaos in all of its processes, it was you just proved, you know, they knew it. They knew they had just proven that living things were more than material.
Yeah.
Because they do the opposite.
Persist.
You know, every living thing takes random air, random sunlight, random water, and random, you know, soil, or, you know, whatnot, you know, matter.
Chaos.
And turns it into order. You know, even plants, not just animals.
Yeah.
You know, the simplest plant takes those random ingredients and makes a beautiful flower out of it. That's a complete violation of the second law of thermodynamics. You know, and for years, everyone was told to forcibly not notice that fact, and they and they tried to get you to burrow in on the details and say, well, look at we've looked at every single chemical process and what, every single one of the material processes obeys the second law of thermodynamics perfectly. Yeah. But the whole doesn't. So the whole is not the sum of the parts. It's obvious. It's self-evident. Those who will see, choose, not those who do, don't counteract this willfully, this obvious fact. Right. See, and it's gotten to such extremes, of this this heavy-handed, thou shalt not speak of that fact, that a few brave souls are willing to risk their whole, tenure and career and stuff to say that the king has no clothes on, to say what anyone with any common sense could see is obvious. Life is obviously more than matter. Something is counteracting. Something is overruling. It's not eliminating the second law. You can burn into the details and it's all there. The second law is still functioning. It didn't disappear, but something is overruling it. Something is dominating it. Mind dominates matter. The moment the mind is taken away and there's nothing but matter, it
doesn't matter.
Not only the parts, but the whole. Do the second law of thermodynamics thing.
Yeah, the king having no clothes is really the fact.
So when you were talking about the single cell and letting go of the father and coming back through to the mother, mm-hmm. with Jesus and how they their bestowal, it almost sounded like you were cracking the code of the secret of Sanaritan.
Well,
seriously.
Well, see, and you'll see this when we get into the next section. They put this out directly. I mean, the precise physics details. Okay, I mean you can't understand. Not even high beings can. But the basic facts are self-evident once you have, the mother and deity and everything in to work with in understanding things. It's not an existential mystery. It's just an experiential mystery, because by and large, it's not experienceable. It's not anywhere that you can get your fingers on and experience it to understand it. It's hidden. In the whole. Basically, to understand things, you need parts that you can poke, and it's none of us are big enough to poke the hole all at once. We have tiny little fingers. And so there's just no way that we can experience what the mother does. And humans have long known this. They've called that providence. There seems to be some mysterious, holistic thing that you can't point to anywhere that coalesces at times.
Coordinating influence.
Like into a single-celled human that matures into Michael of Nebadon.
Without recognizing the profoundness and the reality of the mother in the revelation, which is so absent within the major body of the Ratchet movement, there's no way to understand the revelation. Because it really makes you can't really get to the meat of Revelation without the recognition that the mother is.
You can't put the
profound role.
Yeah, you can't put the fifth epical revelation in the old wineskin of the first four. The first four don't give you what you need. The fifth epical revelation isn't just a restatement of the first four. It's a revelation. It goes beyond anything in the first four. And there's
the movement itself is now focused on the Jesus paper, the fourth epic revelation, and completely sort of sidestepping the fifth epic revelation.
Exactly.
But But
that's exactly what we're talking about on Facebook right now.
But, what are we talking about here? We're talking about incarnation. I think that's a part of what happened in the fourth epical revelation. If you don't have what the fifth epical has to offer you, all you have is the old wineskin of that's all magic man stuff. The magic man waved his magic wand and magically, the second person of the Trinity, was born of Mary. That's all you've got without doing what we're doing here, using what we've discovered and noticing that it allows us to begin to really understand in a very direct way, why in order to pour out the Spirit of Truth, you have to do a bestowal rather than just, it says that, so I can say, whatever. Okay, no, why? Figure it out.
There is a place to clarify and work on learning about the fourth epical revelation. I mean, there are people who are ready for that and no more. And so, there is a place for that. And if that's where people are getting clarity and, getting nurtured, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And for those who need the fifth epical revelation and are ready for it, that's what we're addressing.
Yeah, and it's very important to get this very clear, because there are people on the planet, the last thing they need is the fifth epical revelation. They desperately need the fourth. And if you try to give them the fourth with the fifth, you're not going to give them what they need. You're making the exact same mistake that the apostles made. Recognize that what they need is the fourth, and only give them the fourth. Only give them a spiritual message. Don't say anything about social, political, economic, or whatnot stuff. Okay? You can't do that with part four of the book. There's all kinds of non-spiritual stuff in the part four of the book.
Then you couldn't even show them the book. You would have to let them talk about the fifth.
Right. And to be an ambassador of the fourth epical revelation, what do you have to do? Last paper in the book. You have to embody the faith of Jesus and go out and show the fruits of that faith to the world. That's the fourth epical revelation, not the teachings of Jesus of Nazareth. The fourth epical revelation is Jesus of Nazareth, not Michael of Nebadon. It's just the man, Jesus the man, and the faith of that man. In order to be an apostle of the fourth epical revelation, you have to be the faith of Jesus the man and go out and live that. That's a purely spiritual message and engagement. If you start bringing in Jewish social practices, right or left wing politics,
or adjusters,
or anything,
right. Just
scare the you're not doing the fourth or the fifth. You're an agent of the philosophic chaos of the world. You're making yourself part of the problem. Okay? It's so important to get this clear and to recognize what you sense is your calling. If your calling is the fifth epical revelation, you have a steep learning curve in front of you. You're going to have to unlearn everything you've ever learned, start from scratch, and build a whole new worldview. If you see your calling is there are so many people that didn't get the fourth epical revelation that Jesus intended, that's purely spiritual message. I feel a calling to that. I found the revelation. It made this really clear to me. But now I put the book down and I go out having embodied the faith of Jesus. Well, that may not be an easy thing to do either. That might take you a little time too. How long did it take Jesus to acquire the faith of Jesus? He didn't acquire, he wasn't born with that. Okay? This is a point I try to make. When you read that last paper of the book, it has a very distinct property and its construct. It's got this insanely long preface prior to the first section. The title of the first section is Jesus the Man. Okay? There's this huge preface to Jesus of the Man. He didn't become Jesus the Man overnight. It took him a long time, a long preface, a long ramp up. You've got to do that too. You weren't born with the faith of Jesus. If you're going to be an apostle of the fourth epical revelation, that's a pretty tall challenge too. But the fifth is even greater. You need the faith of Jesus plus everything else in the universe in order to present the fifth epical revelation. So it's a huge task. Everything is here to do it. If you just so consecrate yourself, give yourself, some number of years of time, with that wholehearted consecration, now that you recognize really what you're up to, you can get there. They've given you every single thing you need. Even little things like you finally come to the point of recognizing that a magisterial son, fusing with, soul experiential acquirements ends up being this finaliter like ascending sun. It's like, well, there's a group of them. I need a name for them. Oh, they already gave me that name. It's called the Nevadon Core of the Finality. You'll find that in every case. As soon as you just finally get your hands on something and realize you need a name for it, you go, oh, yeah, there's that name in the book that they didn't explain what it went to. I just discovered what it's the name for. Those are the qualified vicegerents of the ultimate, you just discover them. Yeah. So
I have a question then.
It's the way to do it.
If people are not ready for the fifth, most of them you're saying are need to grab a hold of the fourth, then why did they give us this book at this time?
Because it's an emergency revelation. It's not a dispensational revelation. It's exactly like what happened with Machiavelli and Melchizedek. That's why giving us what happened with the third is so important, so you can understand the process. He had two sides to what he was doing. The Abraham side, where he was trying to reinvigorate the second epical revelation. Okay? And that went forward, a reinvigorated second. But behind the scenes, basically unrecorded, he engaged the Kenites and taught them more. The Kenites were a people that would occasionally spawn a leader of the rest of the people. He gave leader potential what it needed to be leader actuality. This gives, there's never been more than 1% leaders in any generation. This is not meant to be universalized. This is meant for those. We need leaders who are nuggets of cosmic integrity to lead us out of the darkness of the philosophic chaos that we're descending into, which if we achieve in full enough form, you can forget about that potential timetable of a magisterial son coming, just like you could have forgotten about the bestowal son coming. Michael can't come to spiritually uplift a world that has no spiritual potential. That was the emergency. So Machiavelli made sure that there was some little faint flicker that he could grab a hold of an uplift. Same thing here. A philosophic uplifter can't come and uplift if there's no philosophic left, if it's been totally washed away. That's what this is for, to find those handful of people between now and when the magisterial son comes that can at least keep us from descending any further, that can reconsecrate themselves to an integrity that there was always a handful of people in the world that had,
So, Chris, not everybody that reads the Arranger book is going to be an apostle, to say, but...
No, but you can be a disciple.
Have you met many?
Not everyone that engaged Jesus was an apostle. Many were disciples. You know, you can become a student. You can begin to work on establishing a greater relationship with the cosmos within you, and for all the benefits like working on circle progress, those are cosmic levels, that'll help you as an individual to work on your cosmic growth. But there's a handful of people that also need to, you know, step forward at times. You know, and they need to have clarity. They need to be able to penetrate through the fog, you know, that's all around them, and make a decision that needs to be made that is rooted in the cosmos and will be upheld. So that we don't.
It helps them to recognize that strength that they have.
I mean, every single field of human endeavor desperately needs someone rooted in the cosmos. Every branch of science, everyone needs someone who still knows that logic is not delusion. You know, that common sense is valid, that is rooted in the grace of God. You know, if all of our leaders are actively rejecting that, they're going to lead us over the cliff. So we need, you know, that's what it's here for, to find the modern day Kenites.
Well, apparently Gaynard was more advanced because he went through the discourse of reality and time and space with him. So, I mean, that was something we discussed with him.
Yeah, and they even pointed out how, you know, he went back to India and was a seed, you know, of reinvigorating some of those lost flickers of the Andite, you know, upstepping in India. I mean, see, even when they're on a dispensational mission, you know, they're doing that sort of thing. But definitely when it's not a dispensational revelation, you know, it's just trying to coordinate the essential knowledge of the fourth epical revelation so that it's possible for someone to re-engage that properly and go out as an apostle of it. And then for that handful, kind of behind the scenes initially, it's trying to get them to take it to the next stop, right, next notch, and recognize they're a cosmic citizen and all that that implies. So that they're safe rulers.
It's human nature to think that to make a difference, you have to do something large and grandiose,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's visible. But it doesn't matter how small, if it's in harmony with the whole, it will be upheld.
It's profound. Wholeness is large.
Right. That's the thing. See,
what's that?
You don't have to be large. Plug into that which is. She will take care of the ubiquity thing that you desire. If you have a relationship with the totality attitude, guess what? It will manifest in a large way. You know, take delight in cultivating that other consecration. Consecrate your mind to the whole, to the totality attitude. She will see to that it's poured out upon all flesh. Just exactly like Michael demonstrated. He plugged into the whole and she poured it out upon all flesh. You plug into the whole. She will pour what you have to offer onto the whole world.
It'll be upheld.
And then she'll uphold it to boot. Yeah.
And you'll see this synchronicity.
Synchronicity.
Yeah.
That too.
Yeah, you'll just see it. You'll see it. You'll feel it.
That's a great word.
Because of something that you said, I was able to answer a question more authoritatively not too long ago to someone who was going on about how great Stephen Hawking was, and I was able to say, well, maybe not so much. And then the person said, well, what's wrong with what Stephen Hawking believes? And I said, well, Stephen Hawking believes that everything can come from nothing. And I says, it's illogical. You know, something can't come from nothing. Mm-hmm. And it was so interesting to just watch that simple statement totally shut that person down. They couldn't
come back with any. It's like...
Right. See, and everyone used to know that.
Yeah.
But there's been an insidious thing, and people have been guided to forget.
Yeah.
See, there's some insidious elements, you know, in these movements of positivism and stuff, you know, that are actively trying to get us to forget what we can't forget.
Mm-hmm. The emperor actually is naked.
Yeah.
But it's just that, like you say, plugging in to something that's truly great, a tiny little plug-in just to that little thing, and the magnitude of the truth of that simple statement was just huge. It was like thud, and there was nothing more the person could say.
Yeah.
He was trying to make something out of nothing.
And as they go forward, they're going, wow, I've got a real choice ahead of me. Either I double down, or I turn around.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they know, you know, it's obvious what they're doing. It's like, I'm about, you know, if I'm going to keep on that path, I'm going to actively deny what I know is wrong.
Well, the deity may be in
play. Great stuff.
All right, let's take a moment and reflect on the whole.